The Devil's Advocates, making radio great again.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, a whopper of a Wednesday edition, and it's only getting better with a fine guest joining me right now live via phone. He's John Nichols from The Nation Magazine. John, welcome back to the big show.
Great to be with you, my friend.
John, I'm gonna throw this one up for you. I'm going to fluff it up for you, sir, because I haven't been keeping score on all this brinksmanship going on in D.C. In regards to what, the debt ceiling and also the infrastructure bills, the couple of infrastructure bills. So where do we stand, John? Because I didn't do the homework.
Well, here's where we stand. Pretty much exactly where we were the last time you looked.
Woo! It's been weeks, John. Nothing's changed.
Yeah, I know. It's a frustrating reality. Here, look. Here's the situation, and it could break at any moment. But right now, what we've got is a standoff where a handful of so-called moderates, who are really corporate-aligned folks, they're people who take a lot of money from big pharma and other bad players, are saying they've got to get a vote on the fiscal infrastructure bill without the social infrastructure bill, the bigger one. And they got to get their fiscal infrastructure bill first, the so-called bipartisan plan. And then the bigger one that's now at $3.5 trillion has to be hacked down to something dramatically less than what it is. Progressives, who are many, many more of them, as well as just mainstream Democrats, people closely aligned with Biden, are saying that's ridiculous. There was a deal to pass the physical and the social infrastructure bills together, and we don't trust the moderates to stick with us on anything big, and so we're not gonna back that approach. So that puts Biden in a very difficult situation. He's got to negotiate everything right now. He can't leave things to the future. He's got to get all these deals in place in the moment. And they keep doing deadlines. You know, it's going to be Monday or Tuesday or Thursday or next Monday or, you know, 2027. But the bottom line that, you know, they keep moving the deadlines because what they're trying to sort out is really, really difficult. And that is to, frankly, bring down the social infrastructure bill significantly, like from $3.5 trillion to something much smaller. Joe Manchin is a real, you know, kind of wrench in the machine here, had suggested as low as $1 trillion. That would cut out, you know, more than two thirds of what the proposal does, make it impossible, quite frankly, to do a lot of the big bold things like expanding Medicare, paid family medical leave, free community college, etc. At the same time, Kyrsten Sinema and other people are pushing for getting rid of tax cuts or taxation of the very wealthy, or at least some of the more aggressive efforts to tax the very wealthy that are key to paying for the thing. And so, you know, here's the deal. If Biden cuts the thing way down and then gets rid of most of the meaningful tax cuts on the very wealthy, you're going to end up with something far less consequential than what's needed. And then progressives will logically be opposed to that or be very, very critical of it. So you end up in a situation where Biden's pushing, pulling, trying to negotiate. Schumer's in the game. Sanders is in the game. Lots of other people. But as of now, we haven't seen the kind of movement on the part of the so-called moderates that would create a situation where it looks like they can definitely pass them.
John Nichols, you got any bright ideas how Joe could persuade Sinema and Manchin? I understand the Democratic Party of the state of Arizona passed a resolution basically telling Sinema, be a freaking Dem, vote with us, do what we want you to do. We helped you get elected. Do you think that's persuasive, embarrassing, or none of the above?
You know, look, it probably isn't all that persuasive in the immediate moment because Sinema is raising tons of money from the people who oppose the the $3.5 trillion bill, like the rich people that don't want to pay taxes, the big pharma, other institutions that are opposed to it. So she's clearly cast her lot with, you know, the other side. And I think that has to be understood. With that said, the threat of a primary challenge, you know, a genuine threat of a primary challenge, you know, that's going to be felt by any politician. She'll be aware of it. She'll be conscious of it. But really, the way to move this thing, I do think it's sort of a combination of that grassroots pressure and pressure from Biden. And here's what Biden has to make clear, especially to Kyrsten Sinema. If the Democrats fail to enact meaningful change on behalf of the great mass of working class and middle class Americans, I mean, really make people's lives better in a way that's notable and in a way that will cause people to A, be excited by what's happened, and B, be enthused to go vote to keep Democrats in power so more good things will happen. If they don't do that, they will lose control of the House and the Senate in 2022. And the remainder of Joe Biden's presidency will be a lame duck presidency. That will mean that Sinema and Manchin are disempowered. Now, they could maybe, you know, maybe you'll theorize that they can play along with the Republicans. But the truth of the matter is that my view is that if the Democrats screw this thing up badly enough, the Republicans will win pretty substantial majorities. And if that's the case, you know, Manchin and Sinema are going to be sidelined, too. So the argument that I would make if I was Joe Biden is that this isn't about, you know, doing the right thing, because obviously that doesn't influence Manchin and Sinema. This is about political survival and the prospect that you could really create a situation where the Democrats are very severely disempowered at a point where American democracy is threatened by the prospect of potentially even the return of Donald Trump. So, you know, I'd work that territory, and then probably not that I would personally do this, but I might, you know, reference the suggestion from Miami Steve Van Zandt of the E Street Band and also star of The Sopranos, who says that, you know, Biden and Democrats might need to start, you know, adopting a little bit more of a Sopranos approach to this. Perhaps a little bit more pressure on some of their wavering people as regards the future of their political careers.
You know, I must have missed a hell of an interview on Brian Williams last night, Stevie Van Zandt. I saw you tweeting it out. I heard he must be trying to sell some books because I heard he announced he had a compulsion to menage a trois. And I'm thinking, that is a spoiled human being. But anyways,
you're gonna get the book right away, though, right? You know, I mean, like, fine. Look at the index under menage a trois, right?
He said that whatever. The 70s were a hell of a wild time. That's my fine guest, John Nichols. He is with The Nation. Right now, he's with the Devil's Advocates right here on the airwaves. John, so what do you think Sinema and Manchin's endgame is? Do you think they're trying to create compromise? Do you think if we turn to the end of this book, we're going to see they took the $1.2 trillion and maybe they added on $2.3 trillion, came to a total bill of $3.5 trillion and said everybody wins? Or do you think their true goal is to just keep cashing the donor checks, and if they have to kill the democracy, so be it?
Well, I hate to disappoint you, but I suspect that their goal is a little bit more toward the cash and the donor checks. But I think that this is the mistake that we make, and it's a big mistake when we're talking about politics, is to assume that everybody you disagree with is in the same camp. And I don't necessarily assume that. I think that Manchin and Sinema, for instance, are very, very different political figures. Sinema is in a rapidly growing state that is changing demographically, culturally, politically, in all sorts of ways. She's trying to surf on top of that, and she's a very, very self-absorbed person, very, very concerned about maintaining her own political position, her own political future. And it's pretty clear that she wants to be the next John McCain. She wants to be the maverick that, you know, sort of beyond party, and that, you know, for her, not for, you know, her political alliances per se. And that's had some success in Arizona. McCain, you know, had a long career there. And it's pretty clear that that's her fantasy. Whether it comes to pass, we'll see. And so if I'm Biden, I'm trying to negotiate with her. That's what I'm going to play to. I'm going to try and look for ways that speak to her desire to be a quote-unquote maverick, but still ultimately deliver something big for Arizona. I'd look for ways to do a lot more good stuff for Arizona because she is very oriented toward that, you know, traditional constituent service stuff, puts out a lot of press releases and that. I'd give her a whole bunch of things to put good press releases out on. Now, Manchin's a different player altogether. Manchin is in a state that isn't growing rapidly, in a state that's actually been, you know, kind of hit by hard times for 30 years or longer. And his state actually needs just about everything that is in this bill. I mean, just about everything that's in it. And so with Manchin, I would use a different kind of pressure there. I would have my allies go up massively on TV in West Virginia on what's in this bill, what's needed, how it helps West Virginians. I would create a lot of space for Manchin to come to you and, you know, run up the popularity of the measure on the ground in his state. I think that's easier to do in West Virginia than it is in Arizona. So I think there you're looking at two different strategies. But here's the problem. Both of those strategies don't play out in the next 24 hours. You know what I mean? And that's the problem with these deadlines. They say, oh, we got to get this by this amount of time. I understand that just in the last like 48 hours, Sinema's been to the White House, you know, like three, maybe four times. You know, they keep going in, they keep talking. One hopes that they're moving toward some point of agreement, but it is very, very hard to do that against a hard deadline when you've got to move not just one person, but two in the Senate, and then also where you've got to move probably 7, 8, 9, 10 in the House. Tiny minorities in the Democratic Party, but they got to be moved. And that is really hard work.
John Nichols from The Nation, our good friend. Thanks for joining us, John. And this is all happening with the backdrop of a debt ceiling and the Republican intransigence against the debt ceiling. And John, here's the other aspect I don't quite understand. I see Schumer says there's no way in hell we're passing a debt ceiling raise through reconciliation. We're not doing it with 50 Democratic votes. And I get it. They're trying to force, even though the Democrats played fair when Trump was the president, Republicans, they have no such preconceived notions. They don't play fair. So how did the Democrats raise the debt ceiling? Is it a continuing resolution? How do we clear this other hurdle at the very same time, John?
Well, I think this is the easy one. Here's where I think the fun comes in. Okay. I think that if I was Schumer, and I know that he's been resistant to this, I'd say, you know, the economic health of the nation is at stake, potentially the global economy. This could create, in the midst of a lingering COVID crisis and all the other challenges facing the U.S. and the world, an economic disaster that could crash the stock market and ultimately give China, Germany, and other countries, you know, a huge leg up on us. As we build the future economy, it's such a serious moment. We just can't afford it. So we've got to get rid of the barrier to doing what needs to be done. And so we're going to eliminate the filibuster.
Well, that'd be great. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, but I'm not kidding about that. It's the way to sell the elimination of the filibuster, right? I mean, you know, up to this point, you got all these, like people, oh, I don't know. There's all this tradition. There's all this history, blah, blah, blah. No, I just say, look, I'm for tradition. I'm for history. Can't crash the global economy. Got to get rid of the filibuster. And the Republicans will scream, well, you don't have to do that. You could only do it for reconciliation. And you say, no, too complicated there. We're just getting rid of the filibuster, period. We're going to, raise the debt ceiling. And then tomorrow we're going to pass the PRO Act to protect labor unions. And the next day we're going to do, the George Floyd reform of policing stuff. And the day after that, we're going to do, and you just got to run down the list.
Well, John Nichols, from your lips to the Democrats' ears. Come back with us. More Devil's Advocates. John Nichols, our fine guest.
Got news for you, pal. They're going to nail us no matter what we do.
You wouldn't hit a guy with glasses on, would you?
Come on, show a little backbone, will you? the Devil's Advocates. Sausage making never looks so good.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. A happy Wednesday to us all. We got the finest of guests. He is John Nichols from The Nation. John, thanks for sticking around, man.
Hey, what would I do? You know, paint my room?
I'm not clear. I understand there are supply shortages, and one of the next issues is going to be paint. And that's not a big problem, John.
Really?
I don't like painting.
I better get to work. I'm going to have to leave now. I got to paint my living room.
Hey, let me ask you, John, if the Dems can't deliver, here's my greatest fear. Mm-hmm. The Dems don't deliver. The Dems get thrashed in the midterms. And then Donald Trump wins re-election, or whatever you would call it, in 2024. And, you know, if we thought he was unfettered prior, Donald Trump back in the White House would be disastrous. I think it would be the ruination of this nation. John, can you see a god-awful scenario like that coming to pass, sir?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thanks for the encouraging words, John.
Yeah. I think you're kind of underplaying the horror of what is possible. Let me just give you a little history lesson here. We'll go quick. Franklin Roosevelt, 1944, proposes an economic bill of rights, right? He's going to guarantee housing, health care, job, pay as a right, you know, huge thing. Gets reelected easily. Democrats increase their majorities in the House and Senate. Then Roosevelt dies. Presidency goes to Harry Truman. He cuts back on everything, gets rid of a lot of the New Dealers, loses control of the Congress in 1946. Congress passes the Taft-Hartley Act that undermines labor, starts deconstructing the New Deal. Okay, well, Democrats should learn their lessons, right? No. Again and again and again throughout history, Democrats come to power with substantial majorities, clearly able to do great, big, meaningful things, and then they cut it short, they do less, they undermine their own position, as Jimmy Carter did in his first 2 years, severely weakening his presidency, as Bill Clinton did when he did NAFTA, and embraced all sorts of elements of the Republican agenda and, you know, governed, you know, is a ridiculously center-right so-called new Democrat who said the era of big government is over, lost, you know, his ability to govern in the 1994 midterms and fell back further as time went on, as Barack Obama did when under pressure from so-called moderate Democrats, he did an insufficient stimulus in 2010, loses control of Congress, unable to govern going forward, you know. So that's the history of it, brother. Again and again and again, you see situations where Democrats are in a position where they could govern, they could do big things, they could make a meaningful change, and they fail to do so. And in failing to do so, they end up screwed.
John, how screwed? Let me clarify. My understanding is Donald Trump is pointing towards October 9th and a rally in Des Moines, Iowa, as perhaps his launch of the reelection campaign. And I think that Trump somehow believes that if he were a candidate and the probable frontrunner in the GOP's nomination field, well, Twitter might be forced to replatform him. He might get his social media back, and he's certainly going to get a bigger platform. Now he's not some ranting former president. Now he's the frontrunner for the nomination in the Republican Party. John, for just purely stealing the attention of the American people, Donald Trump wants so desperately to garner our attention. And I hate to give it to him, John, but I think he's gonna take it.
Yeah, and I'm all for it, man. I'm ready to give it to him. I want Donald Trump to jump right back into the fray and become the total face of the Republican Party. I want Ron Johnson to have to run for re-election as the Donald Trump candidate. I want Rebecca Clayfish to run for governor of Wisconsin as the Donald Trump candidate. I want that, you know, that full-on Trump imprint to be put on every Republican in the country who isn't an anti-Trump. I mean, Liz Cheney gets off the hook, I guess. So why? Because let's look at the track record. Donald Trump didn't win the presidency in 2016. He lost the popular vote. He only prevailed because of, you know, a tremendous number of votes cast for third party candidates. 2018, when Donald Trump is the main issue in the midterm elections, the Democrats win the House and the Senate. 2020, Donald Trump loses the presidency. Democrats pick up two more states. They pick up, they swing five states, including two states that they hadn't won in a long time, Arizona and Georgia, along with Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, and get, you know, a record vote for the presidency, win the Electoral College easily, and hold the House and the Senate. So, if Donald Trump wants to come back and put his imprint on the Republican Party, who am I to stop him?
So effectively, John, you think the saving grace could be Donald Trump on the ballot again in the midterms. Can the Democrats hold it, John? I look at issues like the abortion law in Texas. I think if this doesn't engage voters, especially female voters, what will? But John, is Trump on the ballot effectively in 2022 the best damn thing that could possibly happen to the Democrats?
100% the best thing. Maybe their saving grace. Look, if they cannot get their act together to pass both the physical infrastructure bill and the social infrastructure bill, to do both of these major initiatives and to do them well and wisely at the amount that is sufficient to really make a change in people's lives, then they're going to be in a very, very bad position politically. They're going to be very vulnerable, without a doubt. And the one thing that eases their vulnerability and frankly gives them at least a chance of winning or keeping control of the House and the Senate in 2022, winning governorships around the country, including in Wisconsin, is to have Donald Trump as the opponent.
John, what about Afghanistan as an engaging issue for conservative voters? I certainly think they think they've got this issue to beat Joe Biden with. Obviously, there was some contradiction in the testimony of the generals before Congress contradicted Biden. You know, that continues to, you know, give these conservatives all the license to say, you know, Biden lied and people died. How bad an issue do you think this could be? Theoretically, will it be an engaging issue for conservatives against Biden and against the larger Democratic agenda?
Look, it is an issue. If the election was this week, next week, this fall, perhaps, it might actually have some resonance. But you know, just as Benghazi ultimately did not prove to be a lingering issue in 2020, I think that Afghanistan, there's a lot of mess to it. You know, I don't think you deny the elements of it that don't look good. But I find it very hard to believe that in a country that's so evenly divided on a host of issues, that if people are given a clear choice on domestic issues and, frankly, the future of the country, that folks are going to say, well, you know, I voted for Biden. I want Democrats to be in charge. I'm really concerned about abortion rights. I'm really concerned about a lot of these other issues. But, boy, that Afghanistan thing, I'm going to have to vote to put Mitch McConnell in charge of the Senate.
Well, that's,
I don't see that happening.
John, that's the only reassuring thing you've told me so far. John Nichols from The Nation, thank you so much for joining us here on the Devil's Advocates today.
All right, I'm going to run out and get some paint before it sells out.
Yeah, selling out of paint. Buy yours today. John Nichols, thank you so much. Have a great day. Come back with us. More Devil's Advocates. We'll open up the phone lines for you. They're open. Just dial them up. 844-967-2789.
Good heavens. Are you still trying to win?
I love you.